Hello, listener, and welcome to episode 59 of Good Copy, Bad Copy, the B2B copywriting podcast. My name's David Maguire, and I'm creative director at Radix Communications. Opposite me is our founder and lead copywriter, Fiona Campbell-Howes.
Hello.
And to my right today, I have our senior copywriter, content lead, all-round hirsute hat botherer, and legend in general, Steve George.
Thank you very much. Hi.
Steve is bothering a hat today.
He's living up to his legend.
As ever. So later, we'll have a special report from this year's B2B InTech conference. But first, Steve's joined us this month to talk about his five go-to approaches for writing email subject lines. Okay, I know it kind of sounds like a niche subject, but it's also really tricky and important to get right, because it's the one thing, above all, that affects whether anyone actually reads the email that you're writing. If you have any comments or questions about this episode, please feel free to email us. It's podcast@radix-communications.com or tweet us at radixcom. That's R-A-D-I-X-C-O-M. And that's 1D. Great. So, Steve, thank you for joining us. And I think that the main question on everybody's lips is, do you feel wearing a hat improves your copy? And does it matter whether you're wearing a beanie hat or a baseball cap? Does that put you in a different zone, voice and tone-wise?
I think, as we'll kind of go on to discuss a little bit in this podcast, it really doesn't make a difference either way. It's mostly about just being comfortable. So I just sort of wear what I like, and then I hope that I won't encounter questions like that based on my clothing decisions. And when they come along, I just deal with them.
Well done. Steve, I mean, we've asked you to join us sort of mostly because you gave some really good internal training at Radix the other week for our writers on subject lines and the approaches that you take, because you can find yourself having to do quite a lot of them quite quickly. But perhaps you can take us through why subject lines are so important in the first place.
Yeah, so this is something I've actually done a little bit more thinking about since that training session. Some of the discussions we had that came out of it were very useful in me developing my own idea of why they're so important. But I guess at a very basic level, they're extremely important because they exist to get your email opened. And you could have spent a very long time agonizing over email copy that you think delivers value to someone. But if the subject line doesn't resonate, or if it doesn't have value and doesn't get the email opened, it's all for nothing. So really, you have a very limited amount of space to actually give someone a reason to open up the email and have a look at what it is you're offering.
So do you find then that, I mean, obviously it's such an important part of the copy that you're writing, that you spend a disproportionate amount of time on the email subject line itself compared to the email body text, say?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say disproportionate in terms of character count, word count, absolutely. Because I tend to think of it this way. You generally, in an email that you're sending to a customer, you have a single call to action. You want them to click one thing. And the subject line also has to do that as well. Both things are trying to get the same response. A single click from someone, be it on an actual link out to content you're promoting, or be it on the email itself to open it. So I would spend relatively, you know, it doesn't tend to pan out this way because there's a lot more copy in the email, but I would give the same amount of thought and consideration to the subject lines as I would the actual email copy, because the end result of what you're trying to get from them is exactly the same, really.
Is that something that you find, Fiona, or do you find yourself sort of that these days you're not writing sort of that much email copy that you don't sort of think about how you sort of divide the time within a project?
No, I don't think I write nearly as many emails as Steve, but I still do quite a lot of email copy, and definitely, yeah, spend a lot of time thinking about the subject line. I mean, one thing that we kind of offer our clients as standard is that we will give a selection of three subject line options for every email that we write. So thinking of three different ways to do the thing that Steve just described, you know, get somebody's attention and get them interested and get them to click it, does take up quite a lot of brain power, especially when you've got such a small space to be able to do that in. So yes, it does take a lot of thinking.
So what are the things that you have to achieve in that short space? What does a subject line have to do, Steve?
So within that short space, you have to demonstrate some kind of value. And that's usually achieved through showing that you understand the person that you're sending this email to in some way, whether that's understanding a challenge they face and offering a solution, basically showing that, demonstrating the value of opening the email to them by demonstrating that you understand it has value for them. It's the biggest thing you need to achieve. But I have a little, there's an extra thought I've had recently, which is that as we get to this kind of stage where email inboxes are so bloated, and I'm the office champion of the unread emails.
Oh, I don't know.
I think I can challenge. Go on.
In my personal or work?
Well, personal.
Personal. I've got one account with 10,000 unread and another with 2,000.
33,800.
Right, well,
champion.
I should have known not to challenge you. Regardless, I have very bloated inboxes.
Yes.
And I think that the subject line has to... It also has to form part of a consistent narrative if you assume that the email goes unread. So I think... Imagine for somebody who's not actively engaging with your emails, they're just leaving them unread, but they are seeing them, they're checking their inbox, they're not clicking on them, but they're getting that communication from you, and it's something that they don't actually choose whether to click it or not. They see it regardless. And I think that you have to kind of maintain this consistent tone, and it has to perform value, basically just not swinging them into negative thought about you if they're indifferent to you and not opening it. So... something, for example, like we really miss you email might be a massive break in tone for a brand. And it's a really all-in strategy because, yes, you could get some amount of engagement with people that are disinterested. But if you've just kind of got a passing interest in this brand, you found yourself on their database, you feel indifferent towards it. Anything that comes across preachy or begging in some way can easily swing these indifferent contacts into the negative and just think, right, well, I'm actually going to unsubscribe.
I love that. Yeah. That's a great idea.
That's really interesting because actually I kind of do this in that, you know, I get a lot of marketing emails into my work inbox, and very often I won't have time to read the thing now, but I'll leave it and think, oh, that looks interesting, I'll come back to that later. And maybe I don't ever come back to it, but I've noticed it and I've noticed the brand that's sending it to me. And so when they send me something else in future, I'm more likely to open that one because I've remembered the previous one, even though I didn't actually open it.
Yeah, so it's a very important piece of communication just because by virtue of landing in an active inbox that people are checking on their phone, it's going to get read if they click it or not. So you need to consider the role that that plays in your wider communication strategy with a customer.
Wow. So is there an argument then? Because I know that people talk about if you deliver all the value of the email in the subject line, then people have got no reason to open the email. But then I suppose if it's doing the job that it needs to do, then maybe open rate is the wrong performance metric for the email. Maybe it's almost, in that sense, some email subject line could almost be like display advertising or something.
It's one of the reasons why I'm such a fan of putting high value information up front in an email subject line as one of the strategies for writing it. If you have a really, really interesting stat, if you've got one... really, really clear nugget of information, I'm not against leading with that because your character count and word count is so limited, you can't put all of the value, but I'm not against putting the highest value thing there because for people that don't open the email, they still get it and they see the value. And if it does encourage them to click through, which it should if it's a really valuable piece of information, it's done its job. They don't have to find much more in the email. It just has to then give them a reason to click through.
So I often find that if you're looking at this and the kind of people go, well, we need to do this to maximise our open rate. And then we need to do this to maximise our click-through rate. And it's actually, it seems to be more about the marketing metrics than it is about the efficiency and effectiveness of putting across the message that you're trying to communicate a thing to a customer. It's not the primary thing, isn't the measurement. Your measurement's obviously really important, but whether it's working or not isn't necessarily indicated by whether or not it's hitting the KPIs that marketer happens to have chosen.
Yeah, well, I think it's something that's come along with the rise of marketing automation for emails especially. But you have to have some sort of metric by which you can measure the success of your campaigns. And something like customer sentiment as a result of reading your subject lines but not opening the email is going to be extremely complex to measure and put down. It's something that we can consider now is actually there is a lot of value to that and we should probably be thinking about it. But when it comes to people using a marketing automation platform and trying to measure the success of their campaigns, I mean, how do you translate that into numbers? It's going to be very complex. So I think we still have to think about open rates and click-through rates as things that are going to be managed and monitored for years to come because they are the easiest things to manage and monitor.
Cool. So you mentioned putting the value in the subject line as being one of the strategies that you use. Could you perhaps talk us through? I think you had five approaches.
Yeah, I had five, and I kind of... I wouldn't really say they're rigid things to stick to because obviously the most important point with subject lines is they always have to be tailored to the content you're offering, always tailored to what the message you're going to the customer with is going to be, who that person is, what they need. But there are various strategies that you're going to see landing a lot. So something that leads up front with a high value stat or something that's going to capture your attention is one way. You're going to see classic sort of clickbait style. You won't believe this, more in B2C than B2B, but we all know that sort of clickbait approach. You're going to see ones that lead on being very full of emotion, be it positive or negative, whether it's trying to inspire you to be some sort of leader to change, for change, or whether it's trying to make you feel bad for not being that leader of change and just sort of not taking action. There are a variety of different approaches, yeah, and I think those are kind of the main ones, at least as far as I've thought about moving forward from that training session, yeah.
Fiona, do you have a favourite either in terms of the ones that you write or indeed the emails that you receive? Are there things that you feel is a classic kind of go-to approach that you'd prefer?
That I would prefer to receive as a B2B recipient.
Well, I either really. I'm a big believer in, what was it, market as you would be marketed to.
I will open something that is going to tell me something that I don't already know. So something I'm going to learn from. And also that is really relevant to problems, issues that I'm facing in my day. So, I mean, I think it's what you're saying, Steve. Like the email subject line has to talk to the reader about something that they care about, and has to make them feel like they're going to learn something that they don't already know. Mm. So, it's the combination of those two things, I think.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, that's certainly borne out in the in our own email marketing. You know, that we do as Radix, looking at the stats, and obviously it's, you know, it's a very select mailing list, so we probably don't have the numbers that you've got for one of these kind of, you know, Orbit or a Destra studies or something. But it is certainly, it's the ones that that promise you that you will learn something that you care about. Those are the ones that do well.
Yeah, and so the trick is knowing what people are going to care about.
Exactly that.
And especially when you are, the aim of the email is to promote a piece of content that has already been pre-created, and maybe that piece of content doesn't necessarily speak to the audience about things that they care about. So, you know, that's the challenge we often have. It's like, how do we frame this piece of content so that we're not misleading anybody? You know, it's not clickbait. We're going to say one thing and they're going to click on it and find something completely different. How do we make this piece of content resonate with our audience if it's not quite on topic with what they care about?
Yeah, and it's a particular problem for pieces of content where a business might be using something they created 1 or 2 years ago, maybe even more. How do you bring something that was created with the hot topics of 2 years ago in line with what we're talking about now and make it feel like there's some sort of imperative to look at this right now? And that can be one of the more challenging things that we do in this job.
Do you have a sense of how, do you often feel yourself getting drawn to the clickbait side, or do you have a line where you know, okay, that's all right, that's clickbait?
If I'm leaning into any kind of clickbait style approach, and just for my preference, I don't like going into that territory, it's a concession to the fact that I don't feel I have that much of a compelling value proposition to craft. If I've landed that in that way, I've either thought of a really interesting and what I deem witty turn of phrase that I can use as clickbait, or I am just having to be a little more I guess, a little less genuine in my upfront offer of the value, because for whatever reason I feel I can't be completely reflective of the content in the subject line.
So have good content. Back up something worthwhile rather than sending an email for the sense of it. Mm. That's like, you mentioned, Stephen, one of your approaches that you use, emotion, like a positive emotion or a negative emotion. Do you have a sense of what you prefer or what feels most comfortable, or do we ever get feedback on what works?
Well, I'm not entirely sure which, in terms of actual solid numbers of open rates, click-through rates, that sort of thing, I'm not certain which one works better. But when it comes to writing, I'd massively prefer to use positive emotion where possible. It's just a nicer way to write, and it's much nicer to approach things in talking in an aspirational way. And when we're trying to help people learn things, it's nice to be able to frame that through a sense of what it's going to help them achieve. And putting that in line with whatever their goals are, whatever their role is. It's taking it to the next step. And rather than just you learn this, it's going to help you do this big thing that you really want to do, and that's going to make you really happy and fulfilled personally. That's a much nicer way to write. But often the negative approach can be equally, if not more, effective, because we see positivity a lot, and people definitely shy away from using negativity because it's negative and it doesn't necessarily feel right, or it feels a little bit daunting to send something negative to your customers. But it can be extremely effective to use something negative. Often the fear that inaction is bad or wrong can be a greater driver to click through than the idea that taking action is going to do something nice and beneficial.
Is there a context thing, do you think, where the emails that are maybe lower value, that are spammy in your inbox, they will often tend to be like a negative, oh, if you don't do this, you'll fall foul of this or that legislation, or do you know that you're missing out on something or other? Do you feel that because the negative emotion's easier to do, it's more of a go-to for spam meisters?
Yeah, I don't think we're the best people to ask, because, we know what's gone into creating this negative subject line. And so we're not like a kind of innocent, unknowing audience. but it doesn't work with me. I don't like fear-mongering, scaremongering, or if you don't do these three things, you're an idiot type. That doesn't work for me. So, there's a way to do negativity, I think. So, if you do these three things at work, you're an idiot. Might have one effect, but a title like the best leaders never do these three things, it's exactly the same content, but it has a much warmer kind of emotional impact on your readers. I might be one of the best people if I don't do these three things, rather than I might be an idiot, I better open this and see if I'm an imbecile or not.
I think it really depends a lot as well, the times when you would want to consider using negativity. It's really dependent on the content and specifically what sort of original thought and insight has gone into that content. Just for example, I think that when we're talking about do people that send out spam emails, yes, negativity comes into that a lot more. And I think negativity in email subject lines is very bad when it is something that you've already heard a lot about. Like, you're not going to scare me, you're not going to fearmonger me into talking about GDPR because I've already received 1,000 emails about GDPR and I'm aware of what's going on. Yeah, I've already written most of them. But if you're going to have a negative approach, I think you want to have a foundation, or at least believe that this thing you're saying is new. And if you can't fearmonger over something people already know lots about, if you want to try and take that approach, at least be saying something new to them that they genuinely should feel somewhat scared about, rather than just the current big bad that everyone's talking about.
Do you have any particular favourite examples that you've written or received?
I thought that I kept a folder in Outlook for where I put email subject lines that I think are really good. And I looked in this folder just before this podcast and it was like one in there. So I'll tell you,
That's really telling.
This is the one. Hang on, I've written it down here somewhere. It's from a company called Workfront.
Well done, Workfront.
And the subject line is 20 experts share their secrets on mixing Agile and Waterfall. Get the ebook. So I think, okay, this subject line has got a lot in it. So it's like, I'm going to hear secrets of 20 experts. So I'm going to learn something. You know, it's obviously going to be good because there's 20 of them. I'm going to learn something, if not from all of them, then at least from a couple of them. On mixing Agile and Waterfall, that's a really specific thing. It's a really specific, concrete subject that I can imagine a lot of people care about. You know, we write about this stuff quite a lot. There is a tension between do you use Agile, do you use Waterfall? I imagine a lot of people are interested in that. So it's very concrete, talking to them about something they might care about. And then it says, get the ebook. So they know exactly what they're being offered as well. And we know that the word get is very powerful in a subject line because it just communicates that you're going to get something of value. So I think that's an excellent subject line.
It's so long.
It's very long, but yeah. I mean, I don't know. The jury's out on, you know, short versus long.
I was going to say, did you make a note of when you received that? Or do you remember when it was?
It wasn't recently.
Yeah, because just recently we've seen a massive sort of switch towards the approach subject lines to be a lot shorter, largely driven by the rise of mobile
and the fact
that we know that if people are reading on mobile devices, they're not going to see a great deal of this small screen and so on. Interesting to know exactly when that came about.
But that's probably a couple of years old, to be honest. Mm. But just on that, you know, on the mobile thing and the shorter subject lines, this is where there's the opportunity with the pre-header that a lot of brands don't go with, a lot of marketers don't go with, but you can. There's quite a lot of, as you might say, real estate there in the pre-header add something to the subject line.
Yeah.
Yeah, so one can interpret the other, can't it? You can have something that's kind of attention-grabby, then explain it in the pre-header, or the other way around. I mean, the other thing about that is like the Agile and Waterfall bit comes really late in the subject line.
Mm.
Like normally they'd say, right, get the really important stuff first because of the...
Yeah, you could probably turn this around and go, Agile versus Waterfall, or Agile or Waterfall, 20 experts share their secrets. That might work better for a mobile first world, I suppose. But I think the essence of what's in this subject line is good, and I think works well for B2B.
Yeah, and I think that it does, you know, because although there's various research, the research that you see tends to be short works and really long works.
Mm.
And then you have that kind of scoop in the middle at around sort of 8-9 words. Steve, have you got any particular favourites that you've sent or received?
Not off the top of my head, no. I probably should have had a little look before we came in here to see if I had any examples to share. But I think, on the whole, the negative ones tend to stick with me a lot more. And when it comes to writing my own subject lines, every now and then I like to take a look at what it is I've not opened in my inbox and go through and have a look at those ones that, why have I not clicked on this, and have a think about that, just to keep in mind the sort of practices that are going unopened for me. No specific example, but I think in general, the negatives and the bad ones that we tend, you know, perhaps when you receive it, you might have a laugh about it in the office. I know we do quite often, but that, just because it's our line of work, but they tend to stick with you a lot more. But it's worth taking note of them when they do come in and thinking about why they don't work.
Great. So just to sum up then, Fiona, if you had one tip for our listener about the how to write a great subject line.
So I think it's find the most specific thing that your audience cares about from the thing that you're promoting and pull that out in the subject line. I've got this theory, I think I've said it before on the podcast, that people don't even read whole subject lines. They will just see a phrase or a couple of words that stand out and mean something to them. And if you can know what that phrase is and get it into the subject line, you've got a much better chance of it being opened.
Absolutely. And Steve?
I think my number one tip at the moment is going to be, you need to think about exactly what that subject line is going to do and say to every single person that receives it, regardless of whether or not they go on to open the email, and start thinking about the subject line as something people are going to see and what role, what impact that's going to have in your wider conversation with those clients, especially as we start, lots of companies now are going to be thinking about sending out their opt-in requests in line with GDPR and these kinds of emails that would lead you to break tone, break the way you would normally speak to them, and start speaking to them in a more official or perhaps chattier way that might say something like, oh, we need your permission to do X, Y, Z. Can you do this? Start thinking about how speaking to the kind of on the fence contact that isn't opening all your emails, maybe opening some of them, What impact is that going to have on the way they perceive you, and is it going to help them open them in the future?
Thank you. Now, we just have time to squeeze in a special report from the real world outside our small podcast bunker. Last week, I went to the B2B InTech conference, he said, pretending that we didn't record this in the days before, in swinging London, and had a great time chatting with B2B tech marketers about, well, let's have a listen and find out. I ventured out of the Cornish metropolis to a sleepy backwater known as London, and I'm here to attend the B2B InTech event. And literally, I can promise you, you have never seen so many B2B technology marketers in a single room. It's quite terrifying, actually, the conversations that are going on. And I will see if I can interrupt a few of them and see what they think of the day so far.
Hello, I'm Scott Stockwell. I look after global content for Watson IoT, so that's at IBM. And biggest takeaway from the event is just get on with it, really. Innovation is in everyone's gift. Don't wait. Get on with it.
Sinead, do you
want to? Yep. Hi, my name's Sinead. I work for a large tech company, and I found the event really useful today, in particular the account-based marketing and how it doesn't just have to be one-to-one. It can be too many and filter up so that you have the target accounts that you want to go after.
Hi, I'm Lucas. I work in the marketing campaigns team of a very big tech company. I really enjoyed today. It was very useful and especially inspirational. And I think the bit I took away the most was dream big and then take small steps towards it. Don't give up. Even if it seems out of your reach, go towards it.
Hi, I'm Laura Sutton. I'm from Yellowfin. We're a business software data analytics company, and I'm at InTech because I'm desperate to learn more about the B2B life, and it's a great learning curve.
I'm Marlene Lillian. I'm from SAP, and I'm a first-time attendee of this event, and I'm really enjoying myself because it's all about innovation, and because I truly believe that innovation is becoming everyone's job, and here you can get different flavors and different perspective on what does it take to not just innovate, but do it in a successful way.
Okay, so my name's Alicia Ferris, coming all the way from Canada, Sales Spider Media. The event today is incredible. It's a lot of eye-opening experience to do with innovation and how we can bring that into B2B marketing.
So there you have it, B2B InTech done for another year. For me, my personal highlights were the speakers from Corville, Roosterpunk, and SAP, I think. But really, so much of it is about meeting ambitious and interesting marketers, just the people that you meet in the networking. And the stuff that they're up to is really inspiring. So I'm heading back to Cornwall now with a spring in my step, a head full of ideas, and a determination to be bolder, both in the content that we create for our clients and in our own marketing as well. So look out for that. You've been warned. And sadly, that's all we've got time for in this episode of Good Copy, Bad Copy. If you have any questions or comments about this episode, by all means, email us at podcast@radix-communications.com. You can send us a basic, common or garden email, or if you're feeling particularly fancy, email us a voice memo from your phone. It'd be great to hear your voice and get it on the show. You can also find us on Twitter at radixcom. And you will find our website at radix-communications.com, which is also a good place to sign up for the dizzyingly brilliant email updates that we were talking about earlier in this episode. Next time, we'll be talking about messaging workshops, so if you have any questions or tips, do drop us a line. Until then, goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.